Sorry, I'm warming up my Elvis over here, which already sounds like a euphemism for something awful. But
welcome to the arsehole.
let's leave with that one. You're right. Let's start there.
This is the podcast where we take apart pieces of art and see if we can put them back together just a little bit better. My name is Bea Roberts. I'm a scriptwriter and a script doctor.
And you'll be shocked to learn that I am not, in fact, the ghost of Elvis Presley. I am Luke Haynes.
And with us we have, of course, Disco the podcast puppy.
She's currently asleep on my leg. We're hoping she stays that way for the rest of the episode.
So we haven't been around.
No,
but we're gonna talk about our art's whole plans.
Yes, yeah, we're still out there. We're still out there in the ether.
So this is a little bonus one.
Yeah, we're sort of doing this one. It's an interseasonal thing, I think. Yeah.
And what are we doing, Luke?
We are going to look at Viva Las Vegas because, and you probably know this because most of our listeners know us anyway, but we are getting married in Vegas.
Whoop. It counts as legal in the UK.
It counts, yeah, there's no going back on it. And so we thought we should do a Vegas film, and maybe we should do like a Vegas miniseries. I don't know, we should look at some Vegas movies.
There are quite a lot, actually. Yeah.
But we're going to do Viva Las Vegas.
The Elvis classic.
Yeah, Elvis Presley. Well, the Elvis movie. As is standard, I'm going to try and do the plot of this film, which it's a little bit all over the place. Yeah, I'm going to try as much as I can to do the plot just straight through. I do have to pause in a couple of places just to add comment because it's necessary. But straight off, here we go. And I think the opening titles are the best part of the film.
Because it's vintage Vegas.
Yeah, early 60s Vegas. It's just all the signs you can think of. It looks fantastic. It's got that great architectural style. Gucci,
we learned that's called. Yeah, if you're into that kind of Vegas 50s kitsch, sort of atomic.
Things that have fins and hoops and things. Yeah, all that sort of two-tone Cadillac stuff, which is great.
Yes, it is called Gucci, that style, and we love it.
Vaguely sci-fi architecture. Anyway, it has opening shots, as you'd expect, of all the Vegas Strip and all those great classic casinos that aren't there anymore with all the neon lights on them. We then cut straight away to Elvis walking into a casino to go and play a game of craps. And then there is one of the weirdest edits I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Where basically Elvis silently mooches through a casino for a bit, goes to a craps table, picks up the dice, and then we cut.
Yeah.
And then and we'll get to why at the end. But we cut and then we cut to a guy called Shorty, who is the short character back in Los Angeles. And there's a game I've touched on this before in this show called I Know I Work Here Too.
Yeah.
Where you get this a lot in like bad police procedurals, where somebody tells another character what they're doing in real time and you go, well, yes, they both work there, they know that, why are you telling them
so
that?
The other character could reply, yes, I know, I work here too.
Yeah, exactly, that would be the correct response, but you never get that. So we get a lot of that where Shorty is very excited that Lucky got the dough, which Lucky is apparently Elvis' character, we have to infer from context.
We had to rewind this and watch it about three times because it's genuinely really baffling.
You just have to sort of figure it out. So Shorty is excited that Lucky won the dough in Vegas to get the part for his car that he needs to win
his
big car race.
His car's got no engine.
Yeah. And meanwhile, playing I Know I Work Here Too, Lucky's boss is a simple, ordinary car parts salesman, and he's not going to sell Lucky that car part from his car part business unless Lucky comes here and gives him the money for it. And in the meantime, he'll sell it to anybody else who wants to buy a car part from him, a humble car part salesman. Everybody got this? Good, right? This is where...
What's happened? Why doesn't his car have an engine?
I don't know.
Did it fall out?
What
did it
kind
explode?
Of race car driver is out? It's not clear, right?
Yeah.
Anyway. We then cut back to Elvis, who's in Vegas. Presumably his plan all along was to try and win the money to buy the engine for his car?
Yeah.
That seems to have been the underlying issue. But we never see that. Hey, my name's Lucky. Let me have a go at this craps table. None of that. He just turns up as a silent bit weird cut.
He isn't very lucky, Luke.
No, well, we cut back to him now. My next note is just a personal one. It says that light cannot escape Elvis's hair. Mm. It's like it's a shade of black that is like Vanta black. It's incredible. It's like it's messing with the color balance of my TV. It's like it's distracting. It's not the color of human hair.
It's not.
No. Anyway. Elvis, Lucky, the race car driver, Elvis Presley, the Italian race car champion, who's Count somebody or other, and he may have actually had a name in the script. It probably was Count somebody or other. Nobody's paying attention.
We just refer to him as the Count.
The Count a lot of the time, yeah. So Count, or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Somewhere in my notes, I started trying to do Count puns. He was Count Basic for a while, which, anyway. the Italian champ, the Count, turns up and he asks Elvis to race on his team and act basically as a blocker for him to keep the other racers out of his way while he, the Count, wins the race. But Elvis is going to race to win once he gets his car back from LA, and sorry, Count, but I can't race for you because I'm going to do it my way. Meanwhile, a sexy lady enters sexily, is my next note.
Oh, yeah.
Which is Anne Margaret, Swedish actress, musician.
You might hear of the thing called the male gaze in cinema, which is a whole feminist film theory that basically the camera is the eyes of a man. And you get this particular...
Because many directors are men.
Because those directors were at the time, is by Laura Mulvey, who was a film theorist. Anyway... And what you get are the lingering, long, up-the-leg shots, up-the-butt shots from behind, like a leering man. The camera becomes a leering man. So that this film is super male-gazing.
Yeah, a lot of that going on. There's actually...
But it is also from the 60s. So...
Yeah, it's 1963, I believe.
Yeah.
I think it's a gag, I think it's in Naked Gun 3 where they do that long pan where they go like up the calf and like past the knees and then up and up and then there's another set of knees and like, it's like we're doing, you know, there's some of that going on.
Anne Margaret is here,
ladies and gentlemen. As a character called Rusty, but I'm just going to say Elvis and Anne Margaret because that's who we're dealing with here. She's having trouble with her car and stopped at this garage where Elvis is hanging out with the Count discussing car racing to see if she can get help with her car. Elvis tries to then trick her into being seduced by him by sabotaging her car while she's not looking, so she has to hang around at the garage all day, and hopefully he's charming enough that she'll stay. This is probably a crime to modern audiences, but it was just hijinks.
Just bants.
But that pesky Italian Count fixes it for her and sends her on her way. Oh, he's ruined Elvis's plans to seduce her. Oh, but Elvis decides that she was so beautiful that she must clearly be a Vegas showgirl, so he's just going to go to every girly show in Vegas.
This is the level of logic that this thing operates on.
Yeah, to see if any of them is that woman whose car he sabotaged. Like, so we've gone from like sabotaging her car to low-level stalking here.
The assumption that she's a showgirl.
Yeah, she must be a showgirl.
Who will be working that night.
Yeah. He then runs into the Count again, who's had the same idea, so they team up to go to every girly show in Vegas, and we have a long montage of like, no, she's not at this one. Then there's the Chinese casino where all the women are like Asian beauties, and then she's not one of them, so it's like they all have themed casinos that we keep going to. It's
Now what I do like is this is camp as hell, and I loved it.
Well, they eventually end up at the Cowboy Casino, the Cowboy themed one.
I forgot this bit.
Which presumably was a real one. I don't know if the cowboy with the jerking thumb that you think of in the old Las Vegas, maybe that was for an actual cowboy themed one. I don't know. But it's getting rowdy at the Cowboy Casino and everyone's getting nearly having a fight. And Elvis decides to calm this situation by borrowing a gun and firing it in the air, which cowboys famously don't join in with ever when they're in high spirits. Somehow, Elvis fires a gun in the air and all the cowboys go, oh, we better pay attention to this, it seems important. So they all calm down.
Rather than immediately whipping out their own guns, firing into the crowd.
Rather than a bloodbath or just a lot of shrieking and firing in the air as you're used to, yeah. So Elvis tries that as a tactic, is bafflingly successful, and then calms them down by serenading them with the Yellow Rose of Texas and a medley of Girl Boys.
They all just like, it's like they've been hypnotized by
the
song.
He leads them out of the bar so it's not rowdy, like the Pied Piper of hillbillies, and sort of leads them down the street. But he's no closer to finding Anne Margaret.
Oh.
And after a fruitless night, him and the Count go back to the Count's hotel room, where they spy Anne Margaret, who works as a swim instructor at the hotel?
At
the pool at the hotel.
Yeah.
Not entirely clear. Anyway, Elvis says, oh, hey, Count, let me borrow this guitar that you got here, and takes his guitar aside to try and serenade Anne Margaret and seduce her.
Yeah.
Which comes off as weird and annoying, right?
However, it's probably the best number in the whole thing.
It's a solid musical number in terms of musicals. Yeah, it's actually not a bad number. It works. But my note here just says, like, personally, why would Chris Isaak get away with this? Like, if you ever look at it, we both like Chris Isaak, possibly for different reasons. But if you ever, like, see him, like, doing interviews with people and stuff, he like, serenades, like, the reporters and stuff, and they melt. And so do you. And so does any human being watching, and you go, oh, God damn it. Oh, that's, you know... Chris Isaak could do this. Elvis just comes off as annoying and stalky in this.
Yeah, I mean, it is. He's completely stalking her. Yeah. He's literally been searching for her all night across the city.
Yeah. Anyway, the musical number ends with Anne Margaret pushing Elvis into the pool, where he loses all his money out of his pocket. It drifts off out of his suit while he's trying to swim to back to the side. And incidentally ruins a guitar, right? He says, can I borrow your guitar? Where's my guitar? Oh, it's in the pool. Sorry. I yeah, asshole. Anyway, Elvis has lost all his money and therefore has to get a job as a waiter at the hotel.
No.
Oh. But he's still hitting on Anne Margaret, who's caused him to lose all his money. He should hate this woman at this point, but he's still hitting on her. She's now, through weird movie logic, now into this. Suddenly she just relents and
totally
goes...
Totally inexplicably.
And, it's like, oh, okay, actually, fine. So she invites him to the school gymnasium.
Why?
Yeah. Elvis, completely blind to giant red flags, says, yeah, sure, I'll be there, and turns up at a school gymnasium to meet this woman he's trying to fuck.
Where she's doing a dance number.
They're doing, like, a drama club.
Maybe
thing,
she, because she teaches kids at the pool, she teaches the drama club. It's never clear.
It's not entirely clear,
He doesn't ask. We don't get told.
It turns out this is at the University of Nevada. There's a crest in the background, so maybe they're all of legal age. I don't know. But Elvis does a number. He turns up and goes, oh, Elvis is here. Why don't you do a song, Elvis Presley? And
he doesn't. That you're not. You're called Lucky.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
Yep.
They then go... Now, this is where... this is where the time travel starts to kick in. Where... Presumably, this is the same day, right? So they spent the morning doing drama club at the high school.
I think at like 10 a.m.
Yeah,
you know, normal time for a date.
And then my note just says weirdest date montage ever, because they go clay pigeon shooting, then they go riding motorbikes and do like motorbike acrobatics for a bit.
Yeah.
Then they go to like an Old West theme park and like dress up in Old West gear in this make-believe shanty town and like have a fake gunfight. Then they go on a helicopter ride. Then they go water skiing at the Hoover Dam. I googled this just now. The Hoover Dam's an hour drive from Vegas, give or take.
They're in a helicopter.
Well, okay, so they took the helicopter. Right, okay. Also then, is that legal? Can you ski in the Hoover Dam? Maybe you could have thought. I don't know. Anne Margaret mentions at one point, incidentally, she wants to buy her dad a boat. This will become germane in a second. But at the end of it, Elvis says, oh, have you had a good day? Fucking day?
Yes!
They couldn't, like, say, it must have been like 11 a.m. when they started. They've gone clay pigeon shooting, motorbike acrobatics, gunfight, helicopter, water skiing. Oh, how was your day?
With different outfits.
Yes, they changed.
Every single one. We actually tried to work out how long this would all take.
Yeah. It's a month's worth of seeing somebody. They've somehow time compressed.
Maybe it is supposed to be, but he definitely says, I hope you've had a good day, which does imply it is the same day.
And it's about sunset for this scene, because when Anne-Margaret...
Because
they decide, to not let the day end, they're going to go out for the evening as well. So Anne-Margaret goes to get changed. They've gone back to her dad's boat where she lives. Like, Anne-Margaret goes to get changed, and Elvis sits for a while and plays the piano on the deck of the boat. Now, she wants to buy her dad a new boat. He's already got a boat big enough to have a piano on the deck of it. But anyway, they go out for the evening. They end up, like, doing a... Elvis covers Ray Charles's What I Say.
Oh, yeah.
Weirdly.
How have they got the energy left? They must have been on fucking meth to get through this.
Incredible. And also, like...
I went paddleboarding, and I was knackered.
Yeah. Never mind motorbike jumping and gunfighting and yeah. Also, just on a fucking white people note, like Elvis shouldn't do What I Say.
Oh, no.
It's a very sort of Austin Powers version of what I say. Yeah. Anyway, next day, Anne Margaret learns from the Count that the previous car racing champion crashed and died. I've got an note here, so that makes sense, because nobody knows more about sudden mysterious car accidents than an Italian working in Vegas in the 60s. Sometimes accidents happen. Hey, forget about it. Don't ask too many questions. What do you want? I don't know. I see a lot of things. Hey. Anyway, Anne Margaret is then mad at race car driver Elvis Presley because he insists on driving race cars. So they have a fight. And again, the time travel kicks in once again. They have a fight. She's in what appears to be...
I'm so cross about your career that I already knew about from the minute I met you.
Yes, yeah. But, well, so far his car's not had an engine, so maybe she just assumed that he just sat in it making brum noises. I don't know. But they appear to have this fight in, like, a green parkland somewhere, which implies they're not in Vegas, right? She then storms back to her dad's boat on foot, so they're within walking distance of wherever her dad's boat is.
Like, she flounces and then continues flouncing running.
This seems to be in, like, one cut, but so, like, it seems to be, like, 5 minutes away. She didn't run the hour at motorway speeds to get to her
dad's... I thought that her dad's boat was at the Hoover Dam, because that's where they were water skiing, which is an hour away.
Yeah, it would have to be, right? Because, like, Vegas, famously, not a lot of bodies of water in Vegas.
Yeah.
Anyway... They have an argument about Elvis being determined to continue being a race car driver. She flounces back to her dad's boat. She goes into the living room where they have a second piano. It's a two-piano boat.
Two-piano boat!
Both of our notes say this in caps. How, like, she wants to buy her dad a new boat. How big is his fucking current boat? He has a Panamax houseboat. It's incredible. It has a sunken living room floor.
It has multiple levels. So we actually looked at buying a boat instead of getting a house, and we were like, oh,
it's much cheaper, by the way.
We're like so compromised on space. Yeah, we were like, it's going to be really cramped to live here. Yeah, two piano boat
that they've got there with a sunken living room floor
with full kitchen.
Yeah, every shot that takes place in the interior living quarters of the boat, the camera's not swaying, or there's no indication, so it's big enough that it doesn't move at all.
It's got sort of galleon windows at the end. Yeah. Like a sort of jutting out like you get on a pirate ship. It's fucking enormous. Yeah. It's got columns inside.
Yeah.
It was a paddle boat steamer.
It's something huge.
It's enormous.
Yeah. Anyway, Anne Margaret had said at one point that she wanted a life with the picket fence and a tree. And again, time-travelling delivery guy arrives and delivers a tree, like a potted tree, like a small potted tree, as an apology from Elvis. It's been 4 minutes since they had an argument and she found stuff, and Elvis has found a tree delivery service that he has rung that have turned up somehow, impossibly.
Without the internet.
Yeah, exactly.
He's just like, I don't know, Yellow Pages dick. Found a payphone. Like,
this is
found a tree.
Some
place
sort of
that will
quantum
deliver.
Mechanics is going on here, where people are travelling faster than light.
In the time she's taken to tell her dad she's cross,
Yeah. It's incredible.
Unless her dad's boat was in the Hoover Dam and she's run from it's an hour in a car.
Yeah.
She's run for several hours.
That's what I mean.
To get home.
She's doing 60 miles an hour on foot easily. Anyway, the Count decides that he enjoys the competition.
Oh, yeah, this guy.
Yeah, you remember him. So I've actually gotten down here as Moby Dick, which
is
nice.
Yeah.
Again, I spent a lot of this movie just trying to find puns for this guy's name. He decides to pay off Elvis's debt so that his frenemy doesn't have to be a waiter anymore. He wants the competition. But Elvis is insulted by this and vows to win his own money at the Hotel Talent Contest in order to pay for his own car and race against the Count.
I smell a set piece.
Yeah. This upsets Anne Margaret, who's also going to be in the talent contest, causing her to agree to go on a date with the Count. But uh-oh, the waiter on their date is Elvis.
Hey!
Oh, this is going to be awkward, everybody. Count Basic then says to Anne Margaret that he would absolutely give up racing for love. Elvis accidentally spills things on them. He gets kicked out of the hotel room where they're having their date.
It's actually really good.
The Count then, he's hired a musician to play for them, and the musician starts playing from off screen with the unmistakable voice of Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
But then bursts into the room, it turns out that it's Elvis.
Hey!
Oh, oh. But now it's time for the talent contest somehow. Again,
on their date.
What's the time frame on any of this? Nobody's sure anymore.
No one knows.
Rusty and Margaret does her number, which I've described here as a pedo burlesque number. It's one of those sort of every girl wants a daddy kind of.
They were really into this in the 50s and 60s.
It's really uncomfortable.
There's a lot of Marilyn Monroe musical numbers about getting a daddy.
Yeah, sort of goo goo, sexy goo goo baby talk.
Mm.
Yeah. I've just got a personal note here again. The costumes have changed. She's in a swimsuit at one point. It's kind of saggy. It's like you think, like.
Well, yeah, but that's fabric technology.
Yeah, exactly.
Spandex.
Elvis then comes on to do his number for the talent contest and does the title track. He does Viva Las Vegas. And the competition is a tie. So you're going, okay, so you said, like, it's going to be a duet, right? They're going to do, like, something together. It's going to be, like, you're going to do a topper, right? You've done, like, two good numbers.
Yeah.
And you're going to do a big number. No, they do a coin toss. They're just like, fuck it, fuck it. The judge comes on and flips a coin. And Elvis, whose character name is Lucky, wins the coin toss.
Yeah.
On brand. But it turns out the prize that he's won is just a holiday and a trophy. Whereas Anne Margaret in second place gets money. It doesn't really make any sense.
She has a pool table,
yeah.
Which is fine, because there's space for it on the boat.
Yeah, she's got a giant Panamax houseboat. She'll be fine. They'll put it in the east wing of their galleon house. Oh, if only I could afford to buy my dad a decent boat rather than this floating
this
palace
hovel
that we have. This Taj Mahal with sails that we apparently fucking live in. Yeah, anyway. A dejected Elvis wanders around to what I've listed as a semi-diegetic song. We talked about this before. Diegetic sound is sound that is happening in the movie. Non-diegetic is sound that only the viewer can hear. This seems to be both somehow. It's doing that thing of like...
Yeah, so far all the musical numbers have been diegetic because they are literally doing it in the place. Yeah,
the characters are singing these songs. The characters are singing
in, like other people within the frame can hear them and watch them.
Yeah.
Elvis starts off having a sort of internal monologue-y song, but then it becomes outward. It's the only time it happens.
It's weird.
We're not obeying the laws of space or time.
No, of all the things that make any sense, this is very far down that list. He has to end up taking work as the count's mechanic, but then Shorty turns up from LA and he somehow acquired the motor that Elvis needs to race.
Yay!
Anne Margaret denies having paid for it by selling her pool table. She says, this was nothing to do with me. Anne Margaret then has a sulky song about Elvis caring more about racing than her. It's fairly standard.
Are they back together at this point? She's just been on a date with the Count. Not sure.
Yeah, she then agrees to help with the prep for the Midnight Grand Prix that he's apparently racing in. Why it's starting at midnight is not addressed, but she turns up and...
This is so dangerous.
Yeah, she turns up and ruins all the preparations by being a woman and therefore stupid and bad at car mechanics.
She's woman's all over the place.
Yeah, with her ovaries.
Yeah.
So then they start the race at midnight on the strip, and it starts with a foot race. They like fire a starter pistol and all the racers have got to run to their cars, jump in them, and then race down the middle of the strip, which seems ill-advised at midnight when a lot of drunks are going to be stumbling into it. After 6 hours of the race, they cross the Hoover Dam. Again, I Googled this, it's an hour, so what the fuck is going on?
I don't know, but they've been... this is a race, a high-speed race, that they think, I know when we'll start it, when everyone's really tired and it's dark, and we'll race through the night.
Yeah, and it's now daylight, and they cross the Hoover Dam. Lucky has been following the whole time with his tiny chopper, by which I mean he's in a little helicopter that he somehow owns.
No, not Lucky. Elvis is in the car. Sorry,
Shorty.
Rusty.
Shorty and Rusty and Rusty's dad are following in Shorty's tiny chopper. Yeah. My next note just says many people die. They have a lot of within this race. It's the footage is like over cranked to be faster than it actually was when it was filmed. But there's still a lot of really brutal car crashes going on in this race. All the characters you've never seen just plow off the road and over ravines and forget.
And they show the cars tumbling down with people in. And Elvis just keeps looking over his shoulder
Whoa, that's a shame.
That's one or more person down.
I won't win this because it ain't no race for me. Many people...
and it happens a lot.
Well, the Count has a flat tire and Elvis tries to warn the Count that he has, but then the Count just crashes and dies. That's a shame, says Elvis, and carries on. And he then wins the big car race thanks to Rusty's dad, who bought the part for him after all, and they get married, the end. And if that sounds like I'm skipping over things very quickly, no, that's actually how fast it happens on screen. We literally, the Count dies horribly. You see the crashing go, but he's not walking away from that one. Jesus, the man's dead. And Elvis sort of, there's another one. And they say, now we'll marry Anne Margaret. Here, go. Oh, thanks, Anne Margaret's dad. Yeah, credits, done. It's like Joe Pesci in the movie Casino shows more remorse for men that have died than fucking Elvis does for his friend, who just dies with a flat tire. And literally, he just looks over his shoulder, shrugs, and then wins. It's fucking incredible.
It's been the major B-plot character for the whole film. Congratulations, Luke Hayes.
Yeah.
That is an insane synopsis.
No, but it's I swear all this happened. Watch the movie.
It is such a mad film.
Yeah.
And I haven't got a problem with films basically being strung together set pieces. As long as there's fucking logic. But anyway, as is customary, is now my job to come in as a script doctor and say the thing. I'll start off with things I liked about this script. So we mentioned it being Googie in the titles. It looks fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
The whole movie is this glorious Technicolor, candy-coloured, vivid dream thing.
Yeah.
The Ziegfeld Follies, completely needless, long montage of different showgirls. Yeah. Is exactly what it's like. The costumes are fantastic. Everything looks really, really wonderful. Yeah. And in that beautifully kind of surreal
The colour sort of turned up beyond reality.
Yeah, which is kind of like the Barbie movie that everyone has been, Greta Gerwig was referencing a lot of these old movies with painted backdrops. So it looks really amazing. Nothing is remotely realistic, you can see. And to the point where no one's hair moves ever, even when they're in a helicopter with open sides.
Yeah, or water skiing or riding motorcycles.
The artificiality of it is just beautiful. And it is such a joy to look at all the time. The musical numbers are pretty entertaining for the most part.
Yeah, like you say, the duet around the pool is quite good.
It's by far the best song. Yeah. Yeah.
Like I said, that's doing good musical because it's doing good character through song. It's doing exactly what musicals...
So proud of you.
Yeah, I know. I've learned these things hanging out with you.
So essentially, a character, a song in a musical should be a sung scene. And the sort of the logic I was always told is that the emotion is so big that you just burst into song about whatever it is. They should be moving the plot forward.
Yeah.
And that is an example of the plot moves forward really, really well in this thing. It's like a sort of classic duet warring thing. The lyrics are good. Yeah. It works good. Anne Margaret is a fantastic performer, as is Elvis. Anne Margaret is an amazing dancer and she has a beautiful singing voice. She's really charismatic and they do work well together. Yeah. They are plausibly good romantic leads.
We then bin that off immediately in the next scene when he starts hitting her and she's somehow now into it for
another
reason.
Yeah. anyway, I'm still being positive for now. Sorry. Okay, it also has some really fun comedy beats in it. So, for example, the setup of Anne Margaret's gone on a date to spite Elvis, and Elvis is the waiter on that date.
Yeah, that's a good, solid sitcom premise.
Classic sitcom premise that is not played out to its fullest potential, but it's pretty good.
There's even a decent gag where they go to open the hotel room door and Elvis is against it with the glass. That is well done physical comedy. I like that.
He's not naturally super funny, but he's also not funny. Like, he does deliver some good moments.
He has charm. He can do charm in that sort of roguish way. He takes himself too seriously, I think, to be funny, really.
He's not got that sort of like effortless, someone like Hugh Grant is just so, has funny bones. Yeah, he can kind of make anything funny.
Yeah.
Whereas Elvis, if you give him something funny, he can be funny.
He can make it work,
but I don't think he improvs particularly or does anything like a natural comedian.
Yeah, when Peter Cook died, I remember Stephen Fry said of him that he had funny in the same way that beautiful people have beauty. And it's that. Right? For some people, you're either funny or you're not,
But you know, some people can be good with when they're given good framework to work in. So there's some really, really good bits in it. That's the end of my good
that's
things.
The end of the positive notes. I had one. I guess that's really more of a fixing note.
Okay.
I wanted to talk just briefly because the opening and closing edits are the two most baffling things in it by far, and the ending. The ending edit where Elvis just shrugs off somebody dying and then goes and gets married at the end.
Yeah.
That, there's no excusing that one. That's just fucking horrendous. But the opening edit, there's a reason for this. And this is important to my whole thing here. So I'd like to sort of jump in and explain this a little bit. Because we see Elvis go into a casino, pick up the dice, and then we cut to Shorty at the garage. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's a Hays Code thing, I realised.
Oh.
You can't, and we talked about the Hays Code way, way back when we first started this show, but briefly, the Hays Code was a morality code enforced in Hollywood throughout the sort of 40s and 50s, wherein you couldn't show anything that was morally problematic, right? Mm-hmm. So you couldn't have people like drinking or like women being slutty, you couldn't show anything sexual, anything that. So you can't show Elvis gambling, right?
Oh.
So he picks up the dice. And then it cuts before he throws them because it would be the Hays Code was still kind of enforced at this point. Like I said, this is 1963. By the 60s, European films were being imported into America and they were showing all kinds of things. So they weren't subject to it. So the rules were slackening at a pace. Psycho comes out in 1960, which has Janet Leigh is in her bra. There's a toilet is flushed on screen, all this kind of stuff. It was really pushing
the
boundaries.
Having an affair.
Yeah, she's having an affair. Yeah, exactly. All that stuff. So the Hays Code was breaking down, but for a family-friendly Elvis vehicle, you still don't want to. So you can't show him do it. That's why that cut is so weird, because I realised, it's like, oh, that's why they don't show that.
I wonder if they filmed a proper version of it, and then the cut got enforced later.
Very possibly, So that's what that is. And this plays into like the fact that this is an interesting point historically where Elvis is becoming neutered at a rate of knots.
Mm.
Right? Like, after he died, John Lennon said of Elvis that Elvis died when he went in the army, and it's kind of true, right? There was a point where he was this sort of absolute rebel figure of like, oh, he's wiggling his hips and he's salacious and they're trying to get him banned. And then he signs up for his national service and he's sort of GI Elvis. And he comes back and into this kind of thing where he starts making the movies and he's family friendly. And this is like the exact point where this is happening. This is like peak neutering of Elvis's. Mm. It's like, don't show him gambling. Don't show anything too salacious. Make sure his family's okay. You can take the kids to make sure this film is okay. You can take the family to see it. You know, you get, so that's kind of an interesting historical point. But I just think it's interesting that, like, you can't show any gambling, and so much of the plot takes place on water. Why the fuck is this a Vegas movie? The city that is famously where in casinos are in the desert. Yeah, this is my big note on this.
Just like, but also we can't show gambling, but we can show several horrific car crashes.
Yeah, right, exactly. Those are fine because we don't actually show the people being mangled in them. Although you're looking at them going, God, that was absolutely fatal.
Actually like gasping and wincing as they're shown.
Yeah, and we can show like a long montage of various dancing girls and like, you know, what are you going to do in Vegas? What's it got there? Oh, there's some nice
water skiing.
Light bulbs and there's some water skiing that's only an hour away. There are some showgirls. Where do they work? They're just nowhere, just at the showgirl. Like, it's such a weird choice to make this Vegas movie but not include gambling. And again, if you're going to talk about musicians that I associate with Vegas, surely the Rat Pack, surely not Elvis. It's such an odd choice, and I wonder...
But one of many odd choices, Luke.
Yeah, I wonder if this was like supposed to be like a Louisiana Bayou movie, maybe, originally, and they recut it. I couldn't find anything on this as to why they picked Vegas.
I mean, it's presumably they had the song, right? He had the song Viva Las Vegas, and so they built a movie around
it. But if you're going to build a movie, why is this movie set on a houseboat and not allowed to feature any gambling? This seems like two crucial flaws to this. Maybe, right, a different movie, like, set in the desert at a casino.
Yeah. Well, those were not problems I had picked up on, but you are right.
Yeah, it's just that those are just some of the things that bother me. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
That's okay. Okay, so I'm going to look at, like, structurally, what is the problem with this movie?
Yeah.
Like,
as in Vegas.
As in the plot.
Yeah.
Okay. So one small problem, but I mean, it is a problem, is that it isn't a musical in that largely the film stops for the musical numbers. The plot grinds to a halt so that we can have a musical number.
Yeah, they're very crowbarred in, aren't they?
They're very crowbarred in. And also, when we do have a musical number that is about the actual plot. So, for example, Anne Margaret has a song where she's frustrated with Elvis of like, does he love me or does he love the car more than he loves me?
Yeah.
But what we don't get is that a scene is a unit of change within a story. Her opinion hasn't changed from the beginning to the end of that song. She doesn't realise anything. Yeah. She doesn't resolve to do anything.
Yeah, we're trying to do Hopelessly Devoted from Greece, right? But she doesn't decide at the end of it.
She doesn't make a decision. Yeah. That's the thing. So the songs aren't ever... They don't ever depict change in the plot or any progression. Yeah. We just basically stop and have a musical number. And, you know, and sometimes that's fine and we can sort of get away with it. So, for example, when they are competing in the talent show, the fact that they are competing and trying to outdo each other is the plot. So the song doesn't have to be...
Or when you're stopping a cowboy riot at a casino. Well, the yellow rose of Texas...
That song has changed. By the end of the song, he has cleared.
That's true. He has led them outside.
He's led them outside, like the Pied
Children of Hamelin.
So that is a sort of technical problem, but it's also a problem in this because the musical numbers aren't so good that you're like, fuck it, I don't care. I'll sit here for 5 minutes and just enjoy this amazing spectacle. And also, the film is already so weird and lumpy and stop-starty and nothing makes sense. So I think that is one of the issues with it. I've written here a little smug note, much like Lucky's Car, this movie's got no engine.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Referring to the story engine.
Yeah.
So what is driving the plot of this? So ostensibly it should be a rom-com, but it doesn't actually play by most rom-com rules because the romance, whilst it sort of is important and isn't important, and Elvis, it keeps shifting focus about what we're supposed to care about.
There's a meta version of this where Shorty's like, look, he's found a plot from this movie that we're in.
So my plot two is called Leaps and Lack of Causality.
Yeah.
So the time is not the only thing that jumps in this, and like location. Also, people's feelings and opinions completely fucking just switch. So she's like, I'm going to do a whole musical number about how much I can't fucking stand you. The whole song is about how much I hate you.
Yeah.
And they're like,
hey, you want to go out tomorrow?
Yeah, okay, yeah. Actually. And not begrudgingly, I'm super into it now. I've just 180'd for no reason. And Rusty is constantly, she is the worst character for this because she's the most badly written. But I wonder why. Her opinion just all over the shop, how she feels about anything at any time.
Well, one of my notes here says, like, the there's a sort of, there's a theme here kind of where it's like almost a Rocky sequel, where it's like the frustration of loving somebody, like he's a race car driver and won't stop being a race car driver, and it's dangerous and it could destroy him.
Yeah.
That's all he knows how to be. And surely that's who she needs to be as a character, right?
Yeah, well, we'll get onto fixes in a minute because I have got some.
Yeah.
But so Matt Parker and Trey Stone of South Park have this really good thing.
Trey Parker and Matt Stone?
The South Park guys. Yeah. They have this brilliant thing, which sounds simple, but is actually quite complex and lots of things lack it, which is called therefore but, which means that when you have a piece of plot, you should be able to link. So Lucky goes on a date, therefore she falls in love with Elvis, but Elvis decides he's going to race in the thing. Therefore, Lucky decides to sabotage the race or whatever it is. Rusty, you should be able to link everything in the
plot. This is why I'm just calling them Elvis and Anne Margaret.
I know, it's confusing. Yeah. You should be able to link everything. Everything should have a reason, which is either it follows on logically or there's a subversion because there's a but, there's a problem, there's an obstacle, it's which is your plan.
Right? And all of those are character-driven, right?
Yeah, yeah, they should be ultimately character-driven. But this doesn't... The things don't fucking link.
Yeah.
We don't even know, like, how this is still a day. Why does she need to buy her dad a boat when he lives on the biggest boat anyone has ever seen?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make any sense. And there's a really good bit that the argument with the tree, that completely proves this, because what we also get are these logic loops. So... Rusty has an argument, and Margaret has an argument with Elvis because she's crossed that he's a race car driver, which she's always known about. But maybe we can say, okay, it's fine, because
she didn't realise it was dangerous because she's a woman and doesn't know such things.
His car didn't have an engine. Yeah. Anyway, he apologises, gets the tree. She's completely won over by the tree. She rushes to the hotel. Elvis, I love you. But he's like, I'm still a race car driver. The fundamental thing hasn't been resolved. Yeah. So she's like, now I hate you again. And she's back to an argument. So we have a loop, like a loop-de-loop and a roller coaster.
You could absolutely break that woman's mind if he dies by crashing into a tree. She wouldn't know how to feel about anything for the rest of history.
She doesn't know how to feel about anything anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
And so... The argument doesn't worsen or deepen or reveal anything. We just go down a little plot cul-de-sac and then just drive back out of it again. And like lots of the plot is like that. Like you said, the finale, we should be this race between the Count and Elvis should be like the race at the end of Grease or something. Yeah. It should be like the iconic big finale. We care. We're building up to it. It's the crucial thing.
Hey, you got a flat tire, man. Oh, he's dead now anyway. Okay.
Yeah. It's so abrupt and it's such a weird race. It's like physically, why are they racing through the night? Why are they racing for 6 hours straight? Why does it, what matters? So anyway, I've got fixes.
Okay, you got fixes.
Okay.
I was going to say, I've said it now already. I kind of jumped the gun a little bit. But Anne Margaret is Adrian in a Rocky sequel, right? It's like she wants him to stop doing this thing because she's worried about him, but also it's all he knows how to do. And it's, that gives her some motivation. That gives him, like, some concrete characters that they can play that have feelings and motivations in this world.
I don't know. I mean, the thing about that is that that's quite a, you know, because Rocky, the original Rocky at least, was naturalistic.
Yeah.
And that was quite, it's taken quite seriously. And again, like, we revert to that in Balboa. I'm not going to get into all of the Rockies. We already did like a 5-hour podcast about all of the Rockies. Anyway. But.
Yeah, this movie takes place squarely in Paulie's robot territory.
It really does. Yeah. But this is quite fun. I don't know why we don't just go for a rom com.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is the heyday of the kind of Rock Hudson, Doris Day, rom-commy, light, fluffy duets, musical rom-coms. This is, the 60s were full of these.
Did it not trust itself enough to do that? Did it just assume that Elvis was a singer and that was his primary goal and that he couldn't
give him loads of stuff to do. Yeah. They do give him, like, quite a lot of comedy to do, including physical comedy. I think that they just, maybe Elvis had shit he wanted to do. It feels like they had a series of ideas and thought, no one really cares about the logic of this. Fuck it. We
can't, like I said, the Hay School thing, we can't show any gambling or do any of the fun stuff that we're actually here in Vegas to do in our off hours when this film isn't being shot, that we're just cobbling together.
We know we want Anne Margaret to wiggle around in her pants at least 3 or 4 times doing a musical number. Yeah. So, like, I think it feels like they hit the things that they were interested in and then just weren't really bothered about the logic. But it's quite easy to fix the logic because the logic doesn't need to be super, super deep. It just needs to be functional.
Consistent. So go on, what are your fixes?
Okay, my first one, they set up... for a little while, we have a love triangle between the Count and Elvis and Anne Margaret. Perfect. Brilliant. They're rivals on the racetrack. They're rivals in love.
And we're doing that classic thing that he's like Italian nobility. He's a count. Yeah. He's old money and Elvis is just a poor boy done good. He just wants to buy a motor to race his car.
Right? He's a plucky underdog. Yeah. He can't offer her much, but he's charming.
Yeah.
The Count has stability and maturity. This is an archetype that women have been told that they have to choose between fucking countless rom-com stories and bits of literature. Why don't we just stick with the fucking love triangle? Yeah. It works. It's simple. Everyone understands it. And it gets really good motivation.
Triangles are simple, people.
So it would just unlock so much stuff. And it would make Rusty's flip-flopping emotionally on Elvis make some fucking sense.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think, see, she doesn't just immediately, so I'm going to go slightly into rewrites as I go through my fixes. She doesn't just immediately fall in love with Elvis after doing a whole song about how much she hates him.
Yeah.
Instead, she goes for the Count. He's mature, he's rich, he's sophisticated, he's her, you know, what she wants. But we have that date where Elvis is the waiter right early, when Elvis is actually employed at the hotel at the beginning.
That makes total sense. Yeah.
So Elvis is embarrassed because he's been trying to impress her, but he can't impress her. He has to show up at the waiter. Yeah. He then is disruptive and funny. And because she is like won over by how charming he is and how boyish she is and the Count's being a bit boring on this date, then she does agree to go for a date with Elvis. Right, we get that set piece and it makes sense.
Yeah.
Then she goes...
you can even have a song there about how she's suddenly torn and conflicted, right?
Yeah.
That gives you a...
You absolutely could. So now she's torn between these two men that represent different things.
This is how I feel.
So she goes on a date with Elvis and you could have, you know, that date goes really well or, you know, it goes a bit bum and he hasn't got any money.
Yeah, they go clay pigeon shooting and then
they... I don't understand who's funding that because Elvis has apparently got no money.
Yeah, that's why he's not got a motor in his car. He's spending it all on fucking helicopter rides to the Hoover Dam anyway.
Anyway, the love triangle is continuing. Rusty can't choose. She knows really in her heart she wants Elvis and we're all rooting for her to go for Elvis, but the Count, he's rich, he's showering her with flowers, an even bigger boat than her dad's. No, that's ridiculous. So we get to
it would be a danger to shipping if it was any bigger than that.
So the midpoint, right, is a classic point in a film, comes about halfway through, it's called the midpoint, so it's where things really, really shift.
Yeah.
And shout out to John York, who came back from the BBC Writers Academy. So I think what they do, they race for her. Yeah, they're like, right, we're going to win you.
Yeah.
And she is absolutely furious about this because she doesn't want either of them to race. Yeah. And also she's not a prize to be won.
Yeah.
So now she's cross with both of them. But during the race, Elvis looks like he might be in peril. Maybe he has a little crash.
Yeah.
And Rusty is devastated, realising now that her heart lies with Elvis.
Yeah.
And she must reject the Count. Right. Then we need to scaffold. This is part of the fixing. We need to scaffold to a finale so that it makes sense. So, so I think don't make it a secret till right at the end, weirdly, that Elvis has suddenly got the money for his car repairs from Rusty's dad, who likes him. I think that should come in now of like, she's like, oh, Elvis, you nearly died. I realised I love you, but now you can see the point.
Yeah.
This racing is dangerous. Yeah. So if we're going to be together and get married and have a tree, then... then you have to give
not
up
the
racing.
Way you would have a baby.
Just a sapling to start with. And then he's like, well,
but hey, baby, like, that's my whole identity in this movie, so I can't give up racing. Sorry, I was going to say, is that where he's getting wood comes from?
So they may be torn asunder. Maybe she goes back into the arms of the Count in order to try and upset Elvis. And then Rusty's dad steps in and gives Elvis the money for his big race he's going to do because he knows that that is the right man for his daughter.
Yeah, giving him the talent, approval. Not necessary, just know that I'm...
Before we do that, sorry, my notes. These notes are from several weeks ago when we watched Las Vegas. He's committed to doing this big race, but he still doesn't have the money. He's going to go in the talent show in order to win the money.
Right.
And Rusty's like, right, I'm going to stop you winning the money. I'm going to go in the talent show.
I'm going to
do even better. You could even have some fun hijinks where they're sabotaging each other's costumes or like trying to stop the music or like stop the other one winning. We could have some good comic set pieces here that would be really, really fun. Anyway, Elvis ends up winning the race. He's going to do the race. Rusty's
winning the talent contest.
Winning the talent contest. Yeah. He's going to go forward with this big race. And, you know, Rusty's dad intervenes, look, I've helped him and like I believe in him and that, you know, so it's this really, really big important race between the rivalry between the Count And Elvis is now at an all-time high fighting for the woman that they love. And Rusty realises that she needs to relent and show up, and she shows up to support him. And now as she's watching him, her heart's in her mouth because it's the man that she loves, and we all care about the outcome of this. And maybe the Count doesn't die because it's a really weird bummer.
It's so callous.
It's so mean. Yeah. We could just give him... Maybe the Count... Do you know what would happen? Mm. The Rocky ending would be...
Yeah.
Of the race, Luke.
Well, he loses, but he still gets the girl because she loves him. It doesn't matter.
And the Count is showered in showgirls and money, and he runs off cackling into the sunset.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go. Yeah. That would be a great movie, and we would still get to keep loads of the cool stuff.
That's a much better movie that you've written there, honey.
And I just got to travel back to 1963.
Yeah.
1962, maybe.
Yeah. I've just got a note here about spectacle as well, that, like, the musical numbers that we get are weirdly sort of solo, and like they're people are like moping on a houseboat playing the piano. It's like, you're doing a Vegas movie. Surely we could have splashier numbers than this a lot of the time.
Yeah. Well, like you say, I mean, it hadn't even occurred to me how weird it is, how water-based.
Yeah. It's a water-based film with zero gambling in it.
Like, it's also weird that they've made him a racing car driver.
Yeah.
I mean, presumably they wanted to put a race in, but why that belongs in an Elvis musical, why Elvis isn't an entertainer.
Do they have entertainment in Vegas? Is that a thing that they do?
Maybe he could have Christina Aguilera's arc from Burlesque, where he's an aspiring musician who wants to be the headliner in Vegas, but no one will believe him because he's the busboy and he's doing the dishes. And then she works at the hotel. He works at the hotel.
This is basically my entire criticism. Is the thing I need to fix is, why is this in Vegas? There's no reason. Like I say, you could even do like a steamboat gambling bayou thing where that's underwater. Yeah. Then you've got boats. Yeah. That's an excuse. But
then you'd have gambling again.
Yeah, well, okay, maybe we show the gambling, you guys. Like, but like within 5 or 6 years, we end up at like the Wild Bunch and Peckinpah, and the whole Hayes Code completely collapses in on itself. But anyway.
Yeah, but Elvis is family friendly and cuddly at this point.
That's the thing.
So yeah, but no, not like a fun movie. It's so fine. Stupid.
Yeah, it's very much as there's an old Simpsons gag where they're. Troy McClure is in a TV film, and it's we now return to movie for a rained out ball game, and it's very much one of those, right?
This is
a film to watch when you've got nothing else on and the weather's shit,
and it's joyful and colourful, but don't try and follow the plot.
No, it's having a perfectly nice time, so fine. But I as always, I like your version better.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So we should just do a little bit of housekeeping.
Yes, we need to. Basically, you're all free now, is the banner heading. We had a Patreon. We very, very much appreciate the people that contributed to it. It was very sweet.
Really,
it's very touching. But we made fuck all money out of it. So, and like, ultimately,
we did not quite cover our costs.
We were still losing money even with Patreon donations. So what we've decided is that we still like doing the show, but we're just going to start doing it on a sort of ad hoc when we feel like it, when we've got something to say basis, and it's all going to be free now. So if you're a Patreon contributor, thank you, genuinely.
We're going to cancel your subscription,
we really mean
but thank you.
You don't have to pay us any more money. It's over. It's done. And
we're just going to carry on doing this for fun.
We're just going to do it for the hell of it. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Which is a better version of it, I think, anyway. Yeah.
Absolutely. And not keep us to a sort of, maybe we will go back to one a week, but we're not quite sure yet.
We'll see when we've got the time and what we're each doing. If you are a fan of the show but you've never paid for it, then fuck you, first of all. But secondly, and more importantly, what you will learn
you do
is
not mean that
is,
you startled the dog then.
I'm sorry Disco. But some of the Patreon stuff was a little bit more inside baseball, was a little bit more technical, a little bit more nerdy, and was a little bit more following our bliss, I guess. It was a little bit less structured, so you're going to get more of that cropping up in the feed, I think. So if we're just doing it for the hell of it, and we're not doing Patreon-specific episodes.
We'll see.
We'll see where
this road takes us. So, yes, we were going to be away. We're going to go. We're going to Vegas.
We are going to Vegas. That's why we started this, yeah.
And then getting married. So we are going to be away until October.
Yeah,
But then it's Halloween.
This is my favorite time of the year.
We
started this thing, doing Halloween stuff. So maybe we need to look at the two Halloween sequels as well.
We'll be back for Halloween, is what I'm saying, in some capacity.
Then
we've got Christmas movies to do. It's a bumper season the winter.
Yeah, we'll see.
Thank you for supporting us so far.
Thank you for listening.
If you are new, go and check out our back catalogue. If you have listened this far and enjoyed it,
yes. If you're new and have never paid, then that's fine. That's okay.
Happy for everyone to not
happy
pay.
Happy to have people to listen, even though you didn't pay us anything. I'm just saying we needed the money. They were, no, get your hands off me. No, where are you taking me? You chiseling bastard. We can barely afford to eat. No dog to keep.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Red light city gonna set my tongue on my.